Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. We have a lot to share today. In fact, this is going to be one of those days we're going to go through a lot of topics rather quickly and then slow it down when it comes to looking at the environment, a lot on the environment today. And we will have an opportunity for you to call in and share your points of view. You'll be able to call us to talk about what you believe would be the best way we could help individually and collectively to save our planet. And this is going to be after you hear a UN talk. I was the keynote speaker on Earth Day at the United Nations. And I didn't say what people expected me to or what was even in the program, but you'll hear what I have to say. I thought it was constructive. Then we're going to hear a short clip from Nelson Mandela when he's confronted by Ted Koppel in a live auditorium of some 1,300 people, when he's positioned, why in the world, if you're about peace, would you support a Arafat, who was the head of the Palestinian Liberation Organization? Then Naomi Wolf today, on why would not return to Israel, even though she is very much pro-Jewish and speaks fluent Hebrew and loves Israel. What is her concern? And then what a multimillionaire thinks about poverty. I think you'll have a point of view on this one in particular. So we have a lot to share, plus two headlines or features in New York papers about how principals are actually writing parents saying, congratulations, quote, your child has been promoted, but then it's only because the child failed, but the city lacks funds, and so they don't have time or space for summer school or evening classes. And then it has gotten so bad in New York and other states as well that this is a math X sham, they're calling it. You only need 30% to pass the state regents. Hard to believe? Wow. Used to be 60 was failing, and now it's you can get 30 and still pass. The dumbing down of our educational system. But we begin with where I left off yesterday. Some people, not a lot, have a hiatal hernia. And from the Natural Blaze, which is a really good organization, they publish some really fine work. They're talking about surgeries to correct hernias, and that's the vast majority of people who have a hernia get surgeries, and it's a big industry. But in fact, there are over a million hernia surgical procedures performed each year, and about 800,000 are for a groin hernia. That means that at least 200,000 of those surgeries are devoted to other types of hernias, like hiatal, and up to 10% of the population can experience a hernia in their lifetime. And the hernia is when an organ or tissue is stretched or bulged due to a weakened part of that tissue. And hiatal hernias are in the esophageal stomach area and aren't the most common type, but they can be serious and often warrant medical intervention through invasive diagnostic and surgeries. Most people don't think they have many options outside of surgery or drugs when they're diagnosed. But believe it or not, there are actually things you can do to bring about a hiatal hernia cure. First, hiatal, H-I-A-T-A-L, hernia, happens when there is some kind of weakness in a stomach opening like your esophagus. And this weakness bulges out, usually triggered by some type of strain. Now, someone may see or feel a bulge, or their belly may stick out right below the sternum, and they may push the bulge in and only to have it pop out later. They may not feel pain or see any bulge. But there's all kinds of causes. GERD is very big, and that's from drinking coffee. Our stomach acid, because of all the poor combinations of foods we eat. The heavy lifting that many people do, being overweight, being pregnant, having an injury, even chronic constipation, even straining. And that's why when people are constipated and they're straining, you're really putting yourself at risk there. What you should do is just keep breathing deeply and not strain. And then you have chronic coughing, chronic sneezing, incomplete healing from surgery, some strenuous exercise, smoking, and a previous hernia. The tissue is weakened, and in some type of strain occurs, such as pushing during constipation. So the conventional treatment, generally they'll do an endoscopy or a barium x-ray in order to check for hernia or acid reflux. And then they'll do surgery or a proton pump inhibitor to heal the esophagus from acid reflux, or a truss or a surgical belt to hold the hernia that's not a cure, needless to say. But there are some natural approaches that should be considered. And the idea is, what is weakening the stomach wall or the tissue? Is it a high-stress lifestyle that surges lots of adrenaline to weaken the connective tissue, which it will do? Is it a terrible diet that causes chronic constipation and mineral vitamin loss to the organs? Is it smoking that depletes vitamin C reserves needed to build collagen, the connective tissue in the body? Is it a high acid diet? That's your typical diet: meat, eggs, chicken, fish, alcohol. Or is it a lack of a nutrient like arginine, L-lysine, biotin, sulfur, amino acids, the building blocks protein? So consider this. Do what you can to lose weight, because obesity is a major contributing factor. Exercise, but don't strain or lift. Make 2/3 of your meals, meaning what you would normally eat, but just don't eat as much. And also go more towards high silica, like kale, lots of fruits and vegetables. Stay well hydrated. Use lemon in water. Don't do any extreme. Don't do any yo-yo dieting. And also consider giving up wheat, dairy, and canola oil. They're very strongly inflammatory and cause heartburn and acid reflux. Don't eat canned tomatoes, coffee, and citrus juice. And suspend drinking, no alcohol at all, no smoking. And do whatever it takes to have regular soft bowel movements. That's a lot of water, vitamin C, magnesium. And if you take 1,000 milligrams or 800 milligrams of magnesium before you go to bed at night, you'll generally have a really healthier evacuation in the morning. And that's important. And then make sure you're getting plenty of vitamin C, quercetin, magnesium, vitamin D, B vitamins. And then finding the root cause of the hiatal hernia and targeting that cause is the way to reverse hiatal hernia. So stop the acid, stop the straining, rebuild the tissue. So that is a natural way to help yourself with that. Now, something we do not talk at all about in the United States, and that is illnesses from pesticide drift. But in one state, that state being California, and we have a lot of listeners in California, illnesses from pesticide drifting is increased by 50%. According to Brandon Turville's new article on this, it's causing a lot of people in the state of California to get sick with non-specific illnesses, and where a normal medical evaluation, they would not be able to check for because they're not checking for specific pesticides in your body. And you should be aware of that. That as long as you're in a place that's using pesticides and wildest, California uses more pesticides than any other state because that's where a lot of the produce in America is grown. But it's not a natural environment. What they've done is they've taken a desert and turned it into a very rich agricultural center. And I've driven from one end of the state to the other many times. And I like to take my time and go off-road and visit small communities, and especially in the agriculture belt in the San Joaquin Valley. And you get to see where a lot of our food comes from. But those people are exposed to pesticides, but not just the people putting it on the plant. It goes in the wind, and you've got all those strong winds in California. It can take a pesticide 300, 400, 500 miles. So, but unfortunately, there is not a big movement in California to insist upon getting the pesticides out and using natural ways of rotating crop, interplantings, and natural pesticides. Now, I'm a certified organic farmer and teacher, and I have been for a long time. Many of you, thousands upon thousands of you, over a 14-year period, visited the Fertiller Farm upstate in Stone Ridge, and which is a very tiny area. It's only a couple miles around up there. And it's called Stone Ridge for a reason. There's no topsoil. But through draining a pond and taking the muck and letting it dry and then using that as topsoil and then enriching it and taking compost and building on that soil, it became extremely rich with great vegetables. Well, you're up there, you've got all kinds of predators that will eat whatever you grow, rabbits and squirrels and deer and groundhogs, etc. So how to protect the crop? Well, the easiest was to make a large, get a gallon and jug, and you fill it up about 90% with water. Then you put 2 tablespoons of garlic oil in it, and then 1 tablespoon of cayenne pepper. And then you shake that so it disperses, and then you simply have a little hand spray. And then you spray your crops, and that acts like a natural insecticide and or pesticide. So I didn't lose any crops. So I have people come up on the weekends, and I give them free classes on farming and conservation, and they saw how animals that were rescued were treated, so how to treat an animal. And in particular, what I really enjoyed were the people who brought their children. And the children would be out there playing with chickens and hugging little heifers and other creatures. And then there'd be a little discussion, but you wouldn't want to eat this. And, oh, no. And I'm sure, I don't know how many, but I'm sure many of them went on to advocate, you know, demand not to have the chickens that they saw and the lambs and the little goats eaten. So we need more of that. That's one of my little pet projects. I want to put a homestead upstate. I'm looking where people could come throughout the year. Part of it would be to have a holistic assisted living center to show that you can take people who are advanced and aging and not able to take care of themselves and get them healthy enough to reenter society. That's never been done before. Came close to doing it. There's a whole story I've never told about how I actually had a place. I worked for 3 years on it. I spent a lot of money on having engineers and architects. And of all things, we were just ready to sign a contract. And on the day that we signed the contract, I was going to buy the property and turn it into the only holistic assisted living center in America. Someone said no, and that was it, and it ended. But I haven't forgotten it, and it's still on my mind, because there are tens of millions of Americans who are suffering, physically suffering with dementia, Alzheimer's, and pains and inflammatory conditions. And all of that can be improved or reversed. But to do it, you can't do it in a laboratory. You have to do it in a real environment. And you have to be able to attend to people and help them and guide them. Because remember, they have a whole lifetime of not changing. And now you've got to help them in the changes they need to make to get their health back. Anyhow, that's part of it. But the other part would be a sanctuary, where animal sanctuary, where animals are rescued and rehabilitated, and but also where children can come and learn farming and hydroponics and herb gardens and all the things that children find fascinating. Their parents can bring them up, and they can spend a day and learn, see how food's made, and bread is natural bread. Esseen breads are baked. That's one of my pet projects, but that's one of the things that we need to be spending some time on. And so when I used to do this, not this living part, but all the rest I did upstate at the old Fertiller Farm, and I miss that. Want to do something like that again, but addressing some of the needs today. But there's no need for commercial pesticides. People believe there are, but that's only because they've been using the wrong system to farm. They've been using that old 1930s system, actually before the 30s, where you did monocrops, meaning you just grew one thing, wheat or corn or soybeans, because they were paid a guaranteed amount by the bushel. But the rest of the year, the land was not producing, and they didn't rest any of the land. They farmed everything they had. So that brings me to this. And this is from CBS News. And it says, farmers in America are killing themselves in staggering amounts. Quote, think about trying to live today on the income you had 15 years ago. End quote. That's how agriculture expert Chris Hurt describes the plight facing U.S. farmers today. The unequal economy that emerged over the past decade, combined with patchy access to health care in rural areas, have had a severe impact on the people growing America's food. Recent data shows just how much farmers are dying by suicide at a higher rate than any other occupational group, according to the CDC. Suicide rate in the field of farming, fishing, and forestry is 84 per 100,000, more than 500% that of the population as a whole. That's even as the nation's overall has an increase in suicide rates over the last 30 years. But it doesn't really go into it except the fact that they're not doing well economically. And then you look at the farmers in India. And when we last spoke with Vandana Shiva, she said that it was over 200,000 farmers had killed themselves because they tried genetically engineered cotton and it didn't work. And they killed themselves because they couldn't pay their debts. These were uneducated farmers who didn't know that even though they killed themselves, that didn't end the debt. Their family, the occupants left, were responsible for paying off the debt. And that's a double negative. In any case, here are my thoughts on this. First and foremost, American farmers, small farmers, are not given any break at all. The big farmers, the billionaire farmers, they are. They're given hundreds of billions of dollars in subsidies. Back during the Reagan administration, and also it lasted for quite some time, you had a Federal Reserve. Volcker was head of the Federal Reserve, and he increased the interest rates at one point up to 22%. Now, even if you're having a good year as a farmer, you're lucky if you make it 10 to 12% profit. When you figure in your equipment, the chemicals you're using, your mortgage on your home, the cost of living, insurance, leasehold improvements, and now think about drought or flooding, where you not only don't make a profit of 12, maybe 15%, but you're actually paying interest on your loans of 22%. More than 1 million farms were foreclosed on. There was no compassion, there was no empathy, either by the government, the state governments, or the local communities. As a result, suicide skyrocketed. People felt lost. What they had been doing for generations was simply gone. And younger people saw the plight, saw the hardships, saw the stress, and didn't want to continue into farming. Many wanted to go to college and do other things. So here we are today. The American farmer is shrunk. We have very few small farmers in America compared to just 30 years ago. The federal government, state governments are to blame for that. But here's the solution. We always need food. And most of the farmers are making the mistake of thinking that they still have to do mono crops, one crop. If you were to take just 5 acres out of a 300-acre farm, and you cultivated that 5 acres to do hydroponics, you would make more profit than if you had a 5,000-acre farm. And you would not have the overhead. No chemicals, no tilling, no compost, nothing on the soil, because it's soilless farming. You don't have to worry about flooding or heat, because it's all temperature control. And you have a diversity of crops, and the crops grow 2 to 3 times faster. You can get tomatoes in 30 days instead of 90 days. You can also get sprouts in 5 days. 3 to 8 days, you get any kind of sprout. Microgreens, flowers, so many things that you can grow. Now, we always need food. And when you can grow quality food, organic food, and you can supply it 12 months a year, that brings you back to where you're earning a good living and you're able to provide people with a wholesome, clean food at reasonable prices. That also lowers the carbon footprint. You're not having to transport food from in season or out of season, let's say from Mexico or Argentina or South Africa. You're getting it locally because you're able to produce it. You can grow blueberries, strawberries, raspberries. Yeah, 12 months a year. Now, I'm doing a whole new science that I will report on once I've perfected it to show you how you can take any hydroponic house, any, and you can triple the production and get healthier food. But that's coming out in the near future. In any case, that is a suggestion. Also, to help local farmers, why don't you go to a local farmer and ask them, would they grow food for you if you paid them in advance? You give them what they need to buy their seed, heirloom seeds, like seeds of change. So you're controlling the quality of the seed, you're helping the farmer, you're helping them if they have a low cash flow, and you're giving them the float. You give them half now, and you get 4 or 5 friends and say, we bake us some homemade bread. Here's what we want. We don't want wheat, but you can use rice flour, and we want this. And here are the type of recipes we want, and can you do it? And someone will always say yes. And now your need to have a healthier, wholesome, locally grown food and support a local person helps them. Now, there's no reason in the world not to have at least 200 or 300 local farms working on behalf of the community, and then they can supply foods to hospitals instead of the crap that hospital foods become, to airlines. There's a whole lot of markets there that you can get into, but first you start with the average person. And it's not just greens you can grow, you can make other products as well. Now, there's some states where you can do this easily. The easiest state in America to live in, the most progressive state in America to live in, the state with more progressive people than any other place on the planet is Texas. See, don't make the mistake of looking at some of those, you know, cowboys out there. You've got the most progressive city in the history of the world. Dallas. Forget Austin. Austin's way overrated. I lectured not long ago in Austin to a packed house. I mean, it's so packed, I'd get up on a table. There's so damn many people in there. But I couldn't find a vegetarian restaurant to go to. There was a macrobiotic restaurant, but it closed early. But it's just one long strip where they took some old building. Very ingenious what they did. I certainly support that. And you know, they took an old warehouse and made it into a saloon in another place and made it into, you know, a restaurant and a clothing store. And it's kind of a neat place if you've never been there to walk down that one long street and go up and down the steps and look and good music at night, absolutely, and some nice developments around. But it's dry as a bone. It's in a drought. The one beautiful park that the residents always enjoyed burned to the ground 3 years ago, and now it's just very expensive. And so the people are leaving there, moving up to East Texas around Arkansas and Louisiana because it's less expensive. But there's big artist movement up there. You don't know that. I do, because I drove through there several times and I stopped and talked with people, and I was just amazed at the new communities. And they say, you know, keep this kind of quiet because we don't want this to become like Sedona. Sedona's just a hole now. Or Boulder. I remember walking down the street of Boulder. I was doing a lecture. In fact, I have a picture of me that day up on the website. I was out on the road. Now, what's important about the picture is look at the background. It's just beautiful farmland. There's no houses, nothing. Now, when I was recently in Denver for a PBS special on Colorado Public Television, and I had a day ahead of me. I was going on live that night. I drove out to Boulder, which is only about 25 minutes. It was bumper to bumper houses and developments. It's just a blight, in my opinion. And there was one really cool natural food restaurant there that I used to eat in, and all that's changed. There was I remember one day, and it was so cool back then. I actually walked into all these people's little offices, and I walked in this place, and this guy was going out and picking herbs that day. And I said, I'll join you. You know, I'm an herbalist. I wrote a book, Herbs for the 70s. And that was the founder of Celestial Seasonings. And right beside him was another place. And all these places became famous. They all became household names. And you could just walk right in and speak with them. Everybody was so friendly and open. It was such a wonderful, cool place to be. And I remember going to a bulletin board that day. And this bulletin board was about five bulletin boards all together, and there are all these cards of these lectures and yoga, everything that you could imagine going on. And I stood back and I said, you know, right now, this has got more stuff going on than New York City or Los Angeles combined. That's how progressive Boulder was. It was the most progressive city in the world. Now it's just gentrified and over. It looks like Honolulu. Honolulu looks like Queens with a hill behind it. It's just a mess. It's just over. This is like San Francisco. I was recently lecturing up in Napa Valley, and I had to go out and back in the same day. It was a long trip because it's a 2.5-hour drive after you get out of San Francisco. And as I'm going across the bridge, I'm just looking, and I said to the driver, I said, my goodness, every square inch of land, I used to live down here. I said, where do you live now? He said, Napa. I said, Napa? That's a long way. He said, yep. I get up at 3 o'clock in the morning to be down here to get clients to take them back up there and then come back down here and then go back up. I said, well, you're driving 12 hours a day. He said, that's on a short day because everything is so expensive. Even rent, you can't afford renting there anymore. But what happens when you get too many people living in the place, you get massive congestion, you get too much pollution, you get too much noise, you get too much crime, it's just, we need space. These are not compatible with a sustained and good life. It's just people who feel by some measure of reasoning, they have to be in that kind of congested environment. Anyhow, we need nature. we need to think differently. So the message to all the farmers out there, don't commit suicide. You've been asked to carry on a legacy that is dead. There's a time in life where you have to acknowledge that the system you are supporting every day is itself flawed. Surrender that system. Give it up. Embrace something new and vital. Because remember, major corporations, they can't turn on a dime. Hedge funds and equity partners, they're not interested in whether you commit suicide or not. They care less. They're all a bunch of low-life degenerate bastards, in my opinion. All of them. I make no exception. I've never met a hedge fund manager. I've never met an equity partner that I think these are the economic parasites of the world, and their children are no better. They're just breeding the people who feel entitled. These are the mercenaries. These are the people that if you were on the street begging for a loaf of bread or a piece of bread, and if they saw something that they could take out of your pocket, they would, because they feel entitled to every nickel they make. Our problem is not just about money. It's about the fact that there's an insatiable appetite by people who have money that they never have enough. Never. None of them. Not their wives, their sons, their daughters, their fathers. Nobody wants to get bitten by that toxic venom of greed knows how to go back to anything less. Celebrities, it's all a part of how they live. So for the poor farmer who's at the bottom end of everything, give it up. You can't compete against the industrial farms. You're not being subsidized. They're not, the industrial farmers are not breathing in the pesticides. They're not looking at cracked earth. They're not looking at flooded earth. They're not looking at mold on the ground. They're not looking at seeds rotting. They're not looking at the cost of seeds. They're not looking at interest that you have to pay on your machinery. They don't care. They make money off money. You're the one doing it. Stop playing their game. Go directly. They can't play in your game because your game is too small. It's too honest, too ethical. And what we don't have in America today are ethical capitalists. We should. We don't. You doubt me? I'm going to play a clip right now to our engineers in New York. Please play one of the most popular multimillionaires. You see him every week on the Shark Tank. Here's what he says about poverty. See if you agree with him.
Guys, I know that I cover really depressing news day in and day out. So today I'm especially excited to finally bring you guys something positive.
This, according to Oxfam, of the world's 85 richest people is equal to the 3.5 billion poorest people.
It's fantastic. And this is a great thing because it inspires everybody, gets the motivation to look up to the 1% and say, I want to become one of those people. I'm going to fight hard to get up to the top. This is fantastic news, and of course I applaud it. What can be wrong with this?
Really?
Yes, really.
Yes, in case you're wondering what the 1% actually thinks of the fact that only 85 individuals own the same amount of wealth as the poorest 3.5 billion people on the planet.
This is fantastic news, and of course I applaud it.
Folks, give it up for Mr. Kevin O'Leary, evidently one of the most callous a-holes on television today. In fact, you might recognize him from the vulturistic TV program Shark Tank, a game show where a handful of 1%ers decide whether to crush or finance the dreams of optimistic entrepreneurs. Although I think the show would be more entertaining if O'Leary himself were thrown into an actual Shark Tank. Oh, and by the way, that new Oxfam report that O'Leary thinks is so amazing is actually the latest devastating statistics on the ever-growing wealth gap between the rich and the poor. The study reveals some disturbing facts, including how just 85 people control $110 trillion, and that half of the world's wealth is owned by just 1% of the population. Furthermore, the U.S. has the fastest widening wealth gap of all between the rich and the poor in the entire developed world. And while fat cat 1%er O'Leary thinks this is all great news, Oxfam's most harrowing analysis is that global inequality is threatening both the social stability and the security of the entire planet. But according to O'Leary, nothing is more empowering than poverty. And this study is somehow going to motivate the 3.5 billion poorest people to become the next Bill Gates. What he doesn't seem to get is that this unsustainable model of crony capitalism is designed to keep the wealth gap growing. But at least O'Leary's co-host Amanda Lang seems to have a slightly less sociopathic head on her shoulders.
Don't tell me that you want to redistribute wealth again. That's never going to happen.
You know what? You take a simple stat like this, which is neither good nor bad. It's just a fact.
It's a celebratory stat. I'm very excited about it. I'm wonderful to see it happen. I tell kids every day, what's wrong with this?
It comes up at a cocktail party.
No, Amanda, what's wrong with this statement?
One possible response to it.
If you work hard, you might be stinking rich.
We're talking about people in extreme abject poverty. That's how you get $3.5 billion.
No, we're not. You were just talking about really rich people.
Oh, my bad. I didn't realize the story wasn't about the plight of the poor. It was about validating the wealth hoarding skills of Leary and Associates. And how hilarious is it that Amanda Lang said that this study, which according to her is neither good nor bad, would be a good topic at a cocktail party? Could you both be any more out of touch? Here's the bottom line. There's 3.5 billion people that are starting to get real pissed off at the fact that they're being effed over by the system. So, while one percenters like O'Leary sit on their high thrones celebrating the abysmal state of the world, what they should be really doing is cowering under them.
Keep in mind that the vast majority of very wealthy people make their money off money, not off building things, supporting services that we need, and that would improve the quality of our lives. That's the game they play. That's why on tomorrow's program, for all of our stations that carry the program, that carry the hour noon program, I'm putting on my Tuesday evening program tomorrow with Danny Sheehan to give you the history of how the O'Learys and the Bill Gates and the Warren Buffetts and the George Soros and the Rockefellers and the Swearingens and the Hills and the Goulds, all these multi-wealthy families, what they really think of wealth. Wealth in and of itself is not the issue. It's the power it confers them. That brings me to a little commentary. And this commentary has to do with something I started the other day talking about. If we're nothing else in America today, we're a nation of hypocrites. I talked about the hypocrisy of we wanting peace and freedom and democracy, and yet we've caused more than 20 million people to die since World War II with invasions, regime change, supporting dictators, militarists. How we say that we want and support the small business person, like he just said, oh yes, you know, if you see us getting really rich and controlling over $107 trillion, just a handful of us, you too could one day do that. No, you can't. You can't even do it if you're Monsanto merging with Bayer. That was something like a $67 billion merger. And or Horizon buying Time Warner. With only 7 media companies controlling the airwaves, then you have monopolies. Where's there room for the person who wants to do something unique and individual that's not supported by the mainstream media or the mainstream institutions or the mainstream financial institutions? Then you're on your own. So you see, it's a circular firing squad, except they're the ones who are not getting shot. Everyone else is. But we can't change something unless we're honest about it. Then we can. Individually, if no one else wants to join us. What are some of the current contradictions? Well, how about fighting terrorism? What we want to do and what we say we're doing, but we're actually funding the very terrorist organizations. We fund the White Helmets, a terrorist organization. We funded al-Nusra. We funded the terrorists in Syria. We funded the terrorists in Libya. Yeah. Why isn't anyone calling that out? When was the last time you heard a media person, anyone, CNN, NBC, at a press conference, or even at a press meeting with Sarah Sanders saying, how is it that we have evidence, and it's irrefutable evidence, the United States has spent almost $1 billion funding terrorist organizations, and when we weren't funding them directly, we were funding states like Saudi Arabia and Qatar and United Arab Emirates and Turkey, that were then funding terrorists? You won't hear that question asked. That's a contradiction. In fact, we gave Saudi Arabia over $10 billion in weapons to fight terror. They promptly turned those over to terrorist groups. We say no to religious extremism, and yet Washington, D.C. is entirely run by Christian extremism. We're accusing Russia of expansionism. They're not. and yet NATO is expanding completely around Russia. We say that right to life if you're evangelical, but then you immediately support the death penalty. So you want to protect the child until it's born, then it's up for grabs. You say caring about unborn children is your primary priority politically, and yet when was the last time you did a thing to feed any or clothe or house the 2.5 million homeless children or the 16 million hungry children? Or don't they count in your religious convictions? You say that we should be promoting health, and yet every single thing you see on television promotes disease through junk food and beverages. You say that processed meat eaters are condemning cruelty towards animals. Now, that is something to wrap your mind around. What would be different if you had to look in the face ever they brought out the animal that you were going to eat before they killed it, and you had to watch it and prepare it so you could have your hamburger or your sausage? Would you feel the same about it? Well, the pharmaceutical capital of the world is the United States. And the contradiction is, in hypocrisy, we have the largest amount of drug addictions, and I'm talking about medical drug addictions and drug-related deaths of any country in the world. And new opiates work better than alternatives, what we're told, and hence we give them more overdosed or drugs to overdose and more deaths. They just reported yesterday that they underestimated the amount of people who died from opiates by 70,000 last year. We talk about being energy independent, and yet we completely ignore the power of what causes global warming, eating meat. If we decided to do something about global warming immediately, stop eating meat, and methanes would be reduced substantially. But we don't. We say we value America's multi-ethnic culture, and yet so many of our policies are racist and target minorities. Best example of that would be the Clintons and how they eviscerated. They took a meat cleaver to a threadbare system to support those in need with housing and food, mainly people of color, and they destroyed it. And they pride themselves in that. And they increased the incarceration rate for blacks and minorities by 300%. That's the Clintons. And yet now they expected those same people that they were incarcerating and taking food out of their children's mouths and stopping and searching, they expect them to be voting for them. That's hypocrisy. That's lunacy. We'd rather simply have Americans say Asian Americans, African Americans, Latino Americans, Native Americans, but no white or Caucasian Americans, still included on job applications. Isn't that a contradiction to what we had written? We hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal, unless you're an Asian American, a black American, a Latino American, or a woman, American or Native American. That's a big hypocritical one. Our justice system, one for whites, another for blacks and Latinos. Our justice system, one for wealthy, one for the masses. Protective custody versus imprisonment without due process of law. Upholding mobility for women, yes, versus the real facts of gender inequality in the job place. Law enforcement to protect communities versus law enforcement to violently imprison communities. The only police that ever should be in any community are ones that identify with the culture of that community. And they shouldn't be armed to the teeth and militarized. They should be on the streets and talking with people as they once did, so that there was not a sense of it being a war zone and they're here to stop and search or to shoot. That's a new phenomena. And we've done that just backwards. We talk about climate change, yes, and we do absolutely positively nothing about it. We want clean water and clean air and clean energy. Yes. And yet we deregulate every one of the big polluters. So now our water, our energy, and our air and food are all polluted. We advise the rest of the world on environmentally safe and better practices while we are less than 4% of its population, yet we're using almost 27% of the world's energy. We talk to other people about lowering their carbon footprint, and the poorest people in the world have almost no carbon footprint. They don't contribute to global warming at all. We do. And you want to know the people that are the biggest hypocrites? These purloined people of Hollywood and the celebrity culture. They will go to great extremes to build things and buy things and to spend on things that cause a lot of pollution, but they're never called out for it. We talk about protecting our common lands, the public lands, our lakes and forests and rivers, and yet now we open it all up for private interest to exploit. We say that GMOs are substantially equivalent versus organic, but then all the science says just the opposite. We say nurture children, and then we create an entire double generation of helicopter parenting that makes everyone dysfunctional. We say we want standardized testing. It prepares kids. And I say you should have no standardized testing because that does not allow critical skill development. You're teaching to the test. I say teach to the open and seeding mind that wants to learn, that is so thirsty for knowledge. And you can't do that if all you're doing is trying to get raises or bonuses for the schools by having a higher grade score. You're teaching dysfunctional children. You say we need and pride ourselves in how much money we raise for our presidential campaigns, governor campaigns, Senator House. And I say that's bribery of public officials. You say bring peace and democracy to the world. And I say all you've brought is weapons, warmongering, and overt racism. The U.S. is a permanent member of the U.N. Security Council, but refused to be subject to the International Criminal Court. Hold other nations to the same standards, but not our own. We talk about having the lowest unemployment rate officially of 3.6%, and yet everybody that can no longer find a job or is excluded, and that's over 102 million Americans, which means the actual, real unemployment rate in America is about 26%. We say the economy is booming. I say you're a liar. And I will challenge any economist, Joseph Stiglitz, I don't care who you are and how many Nobel Prizes you've won. Show me how we're booming. I'll show you, I'll deconstruct your arguments on this program. You're a liar. All you economists are liars, unless you're Michael Hudson or someone who actually has integrity. The rest of you, you're just industry and media whores. You're lowlifes. I have no respect for you. But come on the show and debate me. You say we're booming, I'll deconstruct it and show that we're not. I'll show you that we're in debt. I'll show you that we have $200 trillion in debt against $18 trillion in assets in the gross domestic product. I'll show you that anywhere from 5 to 7% of all the gross domestic product comes from money being made off money that does not circulate back in the economy, doesn't pay off anyone's loans, and that's Wall Street making money off money. You say we're, jobs are coming. I'll show you where 58,000 factories have closed and 5 million jobs have been intentionally taken offshore, not by China. Don't blame China. You blame the wrong person. Typical in the United States, the right person is corporations realizing they could make it far more profitable for the stockholders and for the officers and for the value of the stock in the company if they took that product made in the United States and outsourced it to another country, including China, 50% of all the products we imported from China were made by American companies. 50%. That's not China that's to blame. That's the American Wall Street and corporate Fortune 500 clowns that pretend to be human beings when all they are just sociopaths, greedy little capitalist people. We're not booming. Those who are making money are not making it because you are helping other people improve the standard of their living. Look at the president of McDonald's, how much money he makes. Now look at the average person working at McDonald's. Look at the Walton family that has a collective income of over $112 billion. They're right up there with the Koch brothers. And yet look at how much we, the public, have to pay for public assistance to the workers of Walmart that can't even make enough to survive. That's vulture capitalism instead of ethical capitalism. That's the contradiction by which we live, and it's everywhere. We say that people should be self-reliant. The Kochs say this. This man on television just said it. The GOP says it. Well, what about all the millions of Americans who can't find work or can't find a job that pays them a living wage when once they made a living wage? And that was because of unions. Now unions are being eviscerated and attacked. You say, welcome to America, now speak English. You say, we need a Black Friday, and you celebrate it. What about the people who trample over each other and kill people getting into a store to get the exact item that they would have had on any other day? You say, we've got to cut costs. I say, you're a liar. All you're doing is you're cutting other people's salary, and you're causing them to lose benefits so that you can get a larger bonus by showing that you've improved the value of the stock. You'll say, but that's my responsibility. My responsibility is not to give a better working environment or a standard of living or benefits to my employees. And then you wonder why there's so much sadness, depression, and anxiety when a person may not know where their next meal is coming from. You say you need job flexibility versus lack of job security. You say it's good to outsource jobs, and then you fire local employees and hire cheaper labor elsewhere. How does that help a community? How does that help a family? How does that help anyone? But it sure makes you a darling in the eyes of MSNBC and people on Wall Street and the bankers. You're the ones being feeded and celebrated in your excesses. You say you're going through corporate restructuring. I say you're a liar. Your company's in serious problems. If we were to take away all of the ability of people to buy large blocks of stock on margin, we would be back to the beginnings and one of the precipitating factors of the Great Depression. You're all in debt up to your eyeballs, and yet you insist upon doing more on borrowed money. Well, your day of reckoning is here. Especially the 10 million people who are millionaires, but you're not real rich. You got $1 million. Here's what I know. I know that most of you have borrowed against that. You keep borrowing because you keep getting ideas or special inside information. Buy this stock, it's going to go here. Buy some real estate here, it's going to go up. Invest in this syndicate here. So you're up to your eyeballs in debt. So you're able to maintain the facade of being solvent. You're not solvent. In the very near future, I predict that 50% or 5 million millionaires and their families, representing about 20 million people, will be without any money or assets because it's all been leveraged. Now, for the 68 million people who are in the professional class, you're not very bright. In fact, you're dumb. Why? Because you're fully educated. You went to school, you got advanced degrees in architecture and engineering and law and medicine and CPAs and consultants. And what do you do with it? Do you think that the only purpose in life is to climb up that ladder of professional careerism? And what did you sacrifice in your life in the way of happiness, quality time with your spouse and family and yourself, and doing the things that were meaningful, the little things that were important? And when could you go through a day without using your cell phone or computer or being constantly connected to everyone else's responsibility? Because you built up a standard of living that mimics that of the very rich, and yet you're not. So you're also in debt up to your eyeballs. Yeah, your kid's going to private schools, and everyone brags about it. Got a daughter in Yale, got a son in Harvard, and you got another one going into Stanford. That's only going to run you $500,000 when they're done, or more. If they go into medicine, you'll be up to $1 million. But you keep smiling, and you just keep hustling. If you're a lawyer, probably over billionaire clients, most do. Isn't it amazing how we have not seen a single article, heard a single broadcast about how many collateral damage, or execute with extreme prejudice? Remember that, Charlie Sheen, Apocalypse Now? How we use different synonyms for the same thing. We're murdering people without any compassion, empathy, or thought whatsoever. That's how conditioned we've been. We accuse immigrants of being criminals and rapists. The United States is doing much more of the same without any immigrants. Watch very carefully about that mirror you get too close to. It's going to show what you are. So those are just a few of the contradictions. There are thousands. There was a war journalist, Sebastian Junger, while covering Afghanistan. He said, each Javelin rocket launcher costs around $80,000, and the idea is that it's fired by a guy who doesn't make that in a year, at a guy who doesn't make that in a lifetime, and somehow this is what makes wars winnable? Yeah, really stupid, isn't it? Those are just some thoughts. I'm Gary Noll, and what we do on this program is try to get people to think in different ways. And sometimes we get angry when we think, but if we can learn something from our anger, good. We'll be back tomorrow. Have a nice day.